Elle's receiver. "And," Zara whispered as she typed, "that you're willing to go down in rate." Emira wanted to ask her friend, "Am I? Am I willing to go down in rate?" She currently made $16 an hour, and Briar wouldn't be there, so honestly, what was the point? Emira realized then that she never would have actually worked at Body World Fitness as a childcare manager, even if they had offered the position to her. She would have stayed with Briar for as long as the Chamberlains would have her. But Mrs. Chamberlain had finally gone too far, and it was no longer a private matter. Emira heard Mrs. Chamberlain in the hallway say, "Are they almost done?" Emira repeated Zara's words verbatim. "I'm also willing to go down in rate." In Amira's ear, Beverly said, "All right, let's chat about it. Where could you meet us at?" Emira looked to Zara. "Where could I meet you at?" Zara looked back down into her phone. "So, if you go down to 14 an hour," she whispered, "it's the same offer of 29K, but with the addition of benefits." "Okay, could you guys do—" Emira knew that her words did not match the professionalism of the situation, but she pushed past her novice and embarrassment and threw out the number. "14 an hour?" "Emira, hang on," Beverly said. Emira heard voices in the background before Beverly returned. "They're telling me that we can do 13 an hour if we throw in benefits. I know that's rough, but if you stay on for 6 months, I'm sure I can get you more." From the way she said this, Emira could gather that Beverly genuinely wanted her for the job and that she'd offer more if she could. Emira's professionalism had dropped into necessity, and it was a strange relief to see that Beverly's had too. Emira covered the phone and said, "They can only do 13. Zara twisted her lips. "Does that include dental?" Emira winced. "That doesn't include dental, does it?" She listened to Beverly verify that it didn't and shook her head at Zara. "How much is that?" Emira whispered. Zara flipped the phone around and showed her the number $27,040, a few hundred dollars less than she was making now. Zara nodded and said, "Tell her yes." Emira hesitated, and Zara reached out her hand. "Mira, it's just for now," she said. "This is a real-ass job. You want this on your resume." Zara pointed to the phone at Amira's ear. "You don't want this." She pointed to the door behind her and shook her head. There was a fierce desperation in Zara's eyes, and it told Emira that her friend was worried for her and that she had been for some time. Just then, Mrs. Chamberlain knocked and said, "Hello?" Into her phone, Emira said, "I'll take it." As Zara zipped up Amira's backpack, Emira bent down onto her knees next to the toilet and cupped her hand around the mouthpiece. "Okay, thank you so much, Beverly. Okay, thank you." The second she clicked off and stood up straight, Zara opened the door and shielded herself behind it. "You guys okay?" Mrs. Chamberlain peeked in the bathroom. "Oh, Emira, you look so pretty. We gotta hustle downstairs because they're about ready. You okay?" Emira took a breath and said, "I'm great." Lainey appeared next to Mrs. Chamberlain, clapped in the space below her chin and sang, "Places!" Lainey turned to go back downstairs, and when she did, Mrs. Chamberlain looked at Emira with a wide-eyed expression that said, "God, she's a lot, am I right?" The quickness of it was so sharp and pointed, and the ease of it revealed years of practice. Emira swallowed as Mrs. Chamberlain playfully rolled her eyes before she followed Lainey downstairs. Zara slowly pushed the bathroom door closed once again to reveal a face of urgency. "If we gonna go, we gotta go right now." But Mrs. Chamberlain's bite-sized dig at Lainey set off something in Amira's blood and joints, and as she looked back into the mirror, Emira said, "No." She twisted her head from side to side to make sure her foundation blended properly across the arc of her jawline. She threw her hair behind her shoulders and checked the whiteness of her teeth. I'm still gonna do it.
Say what?
Listen to me, Amira turned to her. I'm doing this thing, okay? But as soon as I give you a look, I want you to make a scene. Zara shook her head in reluctance, obligation, and stoic confirmation.
Mira, don't play with me, because you know I'll start some shit.
Do it. I'm serious, Amira promised. In the mirror, she reached into the neck of her dress to hoist and center her breasts.
Just stay with me, and when I tell you, I need you to start wilding out. But girl, wait. Oh my God, I have benefits now?
Amira broke a smile. As Zara and Amira quietly jumped up and down, Amira suddenly realized that there would be a day, probably quite soon, when Briar would no longer remember her. 25. That morning, Lainey had been the first to arrive at the Chamberlain house. She was also the first person Alix directed her question to. Did I do the right thing? With a face full of makeup at 7 a.m., Lainey took both of Alix's hands.
Honey, she said, listen to me. When I was a junior in high school, a soccer coach of mine got a bit too close to our center fielder and performed in our locker room what I now know as second base. I knew it was wrong. Everyone on my team knew it was wrong. But this girl, Monica, well, she said to keep quiet. And at the time, none of us knew what to do. So, we didn't do anything. But I bet you that if Monica were here right now, she would wish that we had. Do you know what I'm saying, Alix?
Alix pressed her lips together and nodded. She tried to release her fingers from Lainey's as she said,
yeah, totally.
Alix would wait to receive a better confirmation from Tamara. In the meantime, she tried to be thankful for Lainey's discreet savviness. 3 days prior, Lainey had quickly and successfully delivered the grocery store video into the wrong hands and then swooped back in to land the first interview.
Everybody wins with this, Lainey promised her. Amira gets to clear her name, Peter's little mix-up will be smoothed over, and you'll get to come back into the spotlight a bit. And don't worry, I know exactly how to plug your book without plugging your book. You know what I mean.
And this was the moment when Alix realized that she'd have to live in Philadelphia both in the flesh and on the internet. But really, it was about time. Alix had accepted the position at the new school. Amira had accepted her role as a full-time nanny. Her editor, Mora, had accepted Alix's apology and the 30 pages she'd scrounged together over the weekend. And now it was time for Alix to accept that she no longer lived in Manhattan. Alix had somehow walked out of this Kelly Copeland mess unscathed, and her upcoming Philadelphia confession seemed to serve as a secret penance. As Amira and Zara finally emerged from the upstairs bathroom, Amira looking charming and nervous in a way Alix hadn't seen before, Alix felt prepared not only to represent the city of Philadelphia, but to let Amira represent her too. As they walked, Zara and Amira swapped a precious exchange before Amira came into the living room and into the light. Lainey said,
let's have a look.
Briar, in a dark purple wing-collared dress, pointed at Zara and told Amira,
that's your friend.
Tamara squeezed Briar's hand and said,
that is Mira's friend. It's almost time for you to sit with them, okay?
Amira grinned at Briar and said,
hey, big girl.
There were two cameramen and a sound guy set up in the center of the room. The television, an armchair, and two bins of children's toys were lined up along the wall behind them. Lainey was at the helm.
She circled the room as she double-checked all angles, numbers, and light sources. She showed no qualms with telling her team,
"Nope, not good enough,"
and watching while they tried again. Alix felt naive to see that Lainey wasn't just a talking head on television, but the executive producer of this upcoming segment that would be broadcast live on WNFT Morning News. In a bright green blouse that tied at the side of her neck, Lainey stood in front of Alix and Amira and took them in.
"Let's get Miss Breyer in here too," Lainey called.
With Catherine babbling in one arm, Tamara delivered Breyer's hand to Alix.
"Mama," Breyer pointed to one of the cameramen. I want, that man has glasses."
"So, Amira, let's add the cream-colored cardigan on top. I think that'll look really nice," Lainey said. "And Alix, let's get a little more powder right here on you, just a tiny bit."
Lainey pointed with her pinkies to the space on the inside of her own eyelids. Tamara called,
"Got it,"
and went to receive a square of foundation. When Zara realized that the cardigan retrieval was in her purview, she mouthed,
"Oh, that's me, okay,"
and jogged to retrieve it from the front vestibule. She tiptoed into the camera light and handed her friend the knitted sweater before backing out and leaning against the living room doorframe. Once Alix and Amira made the corrections, Lainey told them to take a seat on the couch. Alix's house suddenly seemed like one large prop, and she wished she could go back and add Philadelphia-purchased touches that could make her feel more connected to the space. But now that Amira would be spending so much time here, Alix would have another reason to make it feel like home. Alix sat next to Amira on the couch as Lainey straightened Breyer's dress across Amira's knees. Breyer pointed up at Amira and said,
"You got sparklers on your face."
"Okay, ladies, great."
Lainey sat in her own chair across from Amira's end of the couch.
"So, it's just like we talked about. Keep your answers to one or two sentences long, legs shut, eyes open, and don't be afraid to take your time. We've got a whole 4 minutes, okay? Bri, sweetie, look up at me."
Lainey snapped her fingers twice in the air, and Breyer looked at her as if she'd shouted this information.
"So you gotta stay with Amira and be the big sister today, yes?"
Lainey nodded four times and answered the question for herself.
"Yes, ma'am, big sister.
Garrett, give me an ETA." One of the cameramen took his face away from the equipment to adjust his headpiece and say, "We're on in 2 minutes." Alix reached over and squeezed the top of Amira's hand, grazing the sides of her daughter's knee. This was a first for her, too. She'd never been on the local news. Much like Thanksgiving, Alix foresaw this 4-minute segment as a moment that would unite her and Amira in a way that neither of them could ever take back. Alix felt woozy off how pretty Amira looked, how graciously she'd accepted Alix's advice all weekend, and how she was now in her home without being paid. Alix adjusted her posture one last time as Lainey led the women in a silent group breath.
"Just stay with me," Lainey whispered and smiled. "You're gonna hear Misty and Peter first, and then I'll lead you in."
From the little black speaker balanced next to the sound man's feet, Alix heard a buzz and then the familiar sound of WNFT's theme music. The sound guy bent to turn up the volume and stood once again with the boom outstretched over their heads.
"Welcome back to WNFT. You're probably wondering where Lainey is right now," Misty said. "And that leads us to our main story. It's not often that a segment hits this close to home, but this one is currently taking place inside Peter's home."
There was a pause, and while Alix couldn't see her husband, she imagined he was doing a sheepish but charming, "What are you gonna do?" face, while admitting guilt with a raised hand. Misty went on as Alix curved her tongue around her front teeth one last time.
This weekend, a video went viral which showed 25-year-old Temple graduate Amira Tucker being accused of kidnapping by a security guard at Market Depot. Amira was not committing a crime. Rather, she was babysitting. And Peter, I'll pass it on to you because you know Amira and the child in question quite well.
That's correct. Peter let out a small laugh. I'll let Amira speak for herself, as she can shed much more light on the situation than I can, but I would like to say this.
At this moment, Briar looked up at Amira and said,
That's Dada.
Amira nodded with a finger to her lips and whispered, Shh. Briar put her own finger to her lips, looked at Alix, and with the same volume as before, she whispered,
I hear Dada.
Before anything else, I'm a father, Peter confessed from the WNFT stage.
Alix stared at her shoes as his voice came through the speaker.
My wife and I hired Amira last summer to watch over our children, and she's been with us ever since. We try to keep our girls out of the spotlight as much as possible, but on the night of September 19th, that wasn't so easy. It's been a strange couple of days, and my wife and I appreciate all the incoming support for our family, Amira included. Today, my wife, my oldest daughter, and our babysitter, Amira, are going to answer some questions about that night and hopefully put the matter to bed.
On September 19th, a rock was thrown through the front window of the Chamberlain house. This was Lainey's voice, pre-recorded. When Lainey heard the sound, she perked up in her seat and looked to Alix and Amira to mouth, Here we go. Alix couldn't remember if Amira knew if it was a rock or an egg, but Lainey had assured her that a rock would read better and amplify a heightened sense of desperation from Peter and Alix, an obvious reason to reach out to a sitter. All this time later, it seemed almost silly that Alix's biggest concern for months was whether or not Amira knew why said rock/egg was thrown. But Alix told herself that it didn't matter and to take a deep breath.
In 4 minutes, she exhaled, this will all be over.
Lainey's recording went on.
Peter and Alix Chamberlain quickly called Amira Tucker, their part-time babysitter, to take their toddler out of the house while they called the police. But Amira ran into a situation of her own. A Market Depot customer and security guard accused her of kidnapping 3-year-old Briar and refused to let her leave the store.
The sound of Amira's voice radiated into the room through a small speaker, and Alix felt the sofa shift. Amira's entire body rose half an inch. Alix had seen the video enough times to know that while Amira said, What crime is being committed right now? I'm working. She could be seen placing a hand to the side of Briar's head. Alix listened to the video skip to the part at the end where Peter jogged down an adjacent aisle and placed his hand on Amira's shoulder. She could tell that they had raised the volume on Peter's voice so that it could be properly heard by people other than the regular viewers.
Our correspondent, Peter Chamberlain, Lainey went on, was called to the scene to set the record straight. Today, we're sitting down with Amira Tucker, Alix Chamberlain, and the oldest Chamberlain daughter, Briar.
As Alix heard her own name, one of the cameramen looked up with bright eyes and began to dramatically count down from 5 with his right hand. Alix's pulse went into her ears, and her toes seemed to numb as she watched him go from 3 to 2 and then point directly at Lainey.
Alix, Amira, thank you for sitting down with us.
Amira nodded, and Alix said,
Absolutely.
Her voice came out a bit too eager. She sounded as if she were being interviewed for a job and not by the news, and so she tried to silently sit deeper and find her normal register. Briar, still hung up on the cameraman's sudden countdown, raised both her hands in the air and announced with an air of defensiveness,
I can count too.
And thank you, Briar, Lainey said. She gave a kind, kids say the darndest things expression, and then got right back to business. Alix, let's start with you. Could you have ever foreseen this happening when you called Amira late that night?
Oh my gosh, not at all.
Alix felt herself start to breathe. Lainey was smooth and curious in a way that implied the four of them had never met, much less rehearsed. Her conviction made the room seem less staged, their words much less studied.
We were very new to the city, and it seemed like a no-brainer to call Amira to see if she could help out. I think other parents can understand that life gets messy sometimes, and that the grocery store is typically an excellent place to kill time with a toddler.
So, Amira, Lainey turned thoughtful and grave. You and Briar are at Market Depot. What happens next?
Unprompted, Briar sadly put her hands to her cheeks and said,
What happened?
Alix smiled and smoothed Briar's hair down her back.
Well, we were walking around and about to go look in the nut section.
Amira said this more to Briar than to Lainey.
And then a security guard asked if she was my child.
As if Amira had just recited an ancient proverb, Lainey put her elbow to her knee. She squinted, cocked her chin, and intoned,
I told him that I was her babysitter, but he said that I didn't look like I'd been babysitting, and then he refused to let me leave.
I think it's important to point out that Amira had been attending a birthday party, which she left to come and help us out. Alix transferred her hand from her daughter's back to Amira's shoulder. This remark had not been practiced, but the gesture came to her so naturally that she didn't want to stifle it. And since it also seems to be a source of confusion, this video was taken way back in September. Amira was dressed very appropriately for the evening she planned on having.
So, I take it that this wasn't your typical babysitting outfit?
Lainey responded with a small laugh.
Oh, yeah, no, Amira said.
She grinned at both Lainey and Alix as she added,
I usually have, like, a babysitting uniform.
Alix inhaled quick and doubly. She looked into Lainey's green eyes to ground her in the space, and she told herself, Calm down. She means that figuratively. She means jeans or leggings. Alix tightened her ankles against each other. She chose you. Amira and Kelly are no longer together. Stay with it, Alix. You're almost there.
So this interrogation begins. They refuse to let you leave.
Lainey recounted the night's events.
What's going through your mind?
Alix turned her head to face Amira straight on, as Amira tried to find her words. She had already touched her once. She couldn't do it again. But she tried to give her space and positivity, thinking, Come on, Mira, you can do this. Amira picked up Briar from under her armpits and readjusted her on her lap.
I felt pretty confused and upset,
Amira upspoke.
We weren't being loud or anything, so it was weird that they came over. And then I was just really afraid that they would take her away from me.
From Tamara's arms, Catherine let out a very cute yawn that was slightly audible. Tamara tiptoed over to where Zara leaned against the living room entrance in case the yawning continued and she needed to relocate. As Amira finished speaking, Briar looked at one of the cameramen and said,
I'm not a baby, okay?
Looking back on the accusations placed against you, Lainey said to regain the room, Amira, do you feel that justice needs to be served in terminating the security guard's position?
This was not a question they had rehearsed. Was that purposeful on Lainey's end? Alix couldn't tell. She held her breath as she watched Amira secretly react to the surprise, recover, and deliver.
Oh, no, no.
Amira shook her head casually, as if she were refusing dessert after a large meal.
I was pretty upset, but now I'm more mad that this video got out without my permission. I didn't want that at all. And, whoever released it obviously doesn't really care about consent. And I think that is a pretty sad thing. Alix's closed-mouthed and listening smile became taut and tired against her face. There's no way, she thought. There's no way that anyone could know. But even more important than this video and the way in which it found its way to the internet was the fact that even if Kelly hadn't betrayed Amira's trust by now, it would only be a matter of time. Briar touched her toes and looked up at Amira. With a piqued interest, she asked, "Somebody crying?" "And Alix," Lainey turned. Her voice had a slightly joyful lilt in it, and Alix could tell she was preparing to conclude. "You're no stranger to women sticking up for themselves. Coincidentally, you've made a career out of it."
"I have."
Alix turned toward Lainey as she spoke. Alix realized that this might be the one circumstance where she could freely admit that Amira meant the world to her, and she could say this without a cloud of reticence or a concern that Amira was on the clock. "Amira embodies much of the spirit in my business, let her speak," she said. "Not only did she stick up for herself, but she listens to herself, and this is exactly the kind of person Peter and I want around our girls, especially at this important time of their lives."
"And I hear that Amira will be around a lot more often in the new year?"
Lainey looked for confirmation from both Amira and Alix.
"As you continue to write your first book?"
Alix chuckled. So, Lainey's plug wasn't as subtle as Alix had hoped for, but it made her feel more like a small business owner than she had in months.
"That's right," Alix said. "As I finish my book and go back to work, Amira will be joining us full time. And honestly,"
Alix looked at her daughter and said, "we couldn't be happier." Out of the corner of her eye, Alix watched Amira bite the side of her cheek.
"And lastly, Amira," Lainey sighed, "is there anything you'd like to add? Do you have any advice for other caretakers who might run into a similar situation?"
Amira's rehearsed answer included phrases such as, "to stick up for themselves, to hold their ground, and to always have their phones charged, no matter what." But when Amira began to nod very slowly and say, "So the thing is," Alix couldn't figure out how she planned on transitioning into a closing line.
"Well, no. I don't really have any advice because,
Amira exhaled upward and several strands of her bangs fluttered in her breath.
"I will actually not be joining the Chamberlains full time. Or like, at all."
Alix straightened her posture and inhaled through her nose. Her first thought was, "Oh no, she's confused." With sweet and encouraging eyes, Lainey said,
"Can you say more on that, Amira? Is there anything you've gathered from this that you'll bring into your new role?"
Yeah. Amira dropped her head to the side. And this was when Alix recognized the Amira who had been coming to her home for months, the bored tilt in her voice, the cool air of annoyance. Alix's pulse began to tap her neck harder.
"So yeah, it's been fun," Amira said to Lainey. "But this video being released has definitely put some things in perspective, and due to some creative differences, I will no longer be working here. But you can find me at the front desk at the Green Party Philadelphia office because, yeah, that's where I'll be."
Alix's first instinct was to laugh. She let her lips creep beautifully over her teeth and put her hand on the couch in the space between her and Amira.
"No, Amira," she grinned. "She's talking about you being our nanny next year."
"Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am too." Amira lifted Briar and put her on the ground, an act with which both were so clearly familiar, and Alix froze in her seat.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that, Amira clarified. I'm gonna be working full-time with the Green Party instead.
Alix laughed again. She looked at Lainey as if she were realizing in real time that an elaborate joke had been played, but Lainey's face was stretched in bewilderment as well.
I'm sorry, Alix said, tucking her hair behind an ear. What did you? Well, the thing is,
Amira turned toward her.
Basically,
her eyes came up to meet with Alix's, and for a second, Amira appeared as if she'd just remembered a dream she had the night before.
I just think it would be best if we went our separate ways and that those paths never, like, came back together.
It was as if Alix had floated out of her body and was watching herself from 3 feet above. The room suddenly reeked with the terror of a surprise party, and the cameras seemed twice as large, sucking her into their dark, round lenses. Amira had dropped the kind of punchline that evoked both petty embarrassment and screaming dread, and her inflection came as if she'd said, "Sorry, this seat is taken." But the reference and the implication that, yes, Amira and Kelly sat around laughing at new money trash Alix Murphy, that she was still a person that existed. It felt like the plot twist of a horror movie. Suddenly, the call was coming from inside the house. She was the one who had been dead the whole time. This was a dream within another dream. Out of the corner of her right twitching eye, Alix could see Tamara's hand go up to her mouth. She covered half of her face, but Alix could hear her say, "Oh my God." The cameras kept rolling. Alix's nervous system told her to stay as still as she could, to try to keep smiling. She knew she looked like a 3-year-old who had just been tapped on the shoulder in a friendly game of freeze tag, excited but awkwardly unsure of how long they'd have to stay frozen. She opened her mouth to say something, anything, but her tongue felt stupidly huge.
"Okay, yeah, so thanks,"
Amira said to the floor. She stood up and scooted between Alix's legs and the camera gear. Briar trotted after her and said,
"Mira, wait for me."
As Amira exited the living room, she and Zara exchanged another look, but this one prompted Zara to slip her phone into the waistband of her pants. Just as Amira left from sight, Zara jumped into frame.
"Yeah, that's right," Zara said to the camera behind Lainey. "Homegirl is out, okay? She ain't need this."
By this, Zara meant the white throw pillow Amira had been sitting against, which Zara flicked with a disinterested hand.
"She with the Green Party now, nigga. She got money."
Zara began to dip her head at different angles in the camera lens, shouting and clapping on every syllable of,
"This is what democracy looks like."
As Catherine began to clap with Zara, a privately panicked Lainey said to the camera,
"Alix Chamberlain's book, To Whom It May Concern, will be out in May 2017. Back to you, Misty."
In the space above her crotch, Lainey did a manic signal for cut. 26. Amira said, "B, come here real quick." But Briar was already on her heels. Zara's voice began to echo through the first floor of the Chamberlain house as Amira took Briar's hand, and for a moment she thought, "What if I just took you and walked out the door? How far would we get? Shawnee's apartment? Maybe Pittsburgh?" Instead, Amira hoisted Briar onto the toilet in the guest bathroom and closed the door behind her. She squatted and placed her hands on Briar's knees, but when she noticed her palms and pinkies were shaking, she placed them on the sides of the toilet. "Hey, look at me real quick." Briar swung her legs aggressively on the toilet seat, and the top of her shoes almost smacked Amira's chest. With one hand, Briar swiped at a shock of blonde hair, which had fallen into her face. Amira felt her body begin to crack beneath the realization that the ponytails she gave Briar Chamberlain had always been tragically numbered. Briar looked up and pointed to Amira's necklace.
I want this, she said.
Amira thought, oh, fuck, this is really it.
Hey, Amira whispered. You know how I said you can't have favorites?
Briar nodded. She agreed with this statement and waved a finger to say,
no, no, that's not nice.
Outside, Zara could be heard shouting, whose streets? She clapped three times.
Our streets! She clapped again.
Okay, but guess what? Amira smiled. You're my favorite. No one else. Just you.
Okay, Mira?
Briar's eyebrows suddenly appeared as if she had something very important to say.
Maybe? She pointed at Amira's necklace again. Maybe I keep this for a little while.
Amira realized that Briar probably didn't know how to say goodbye because she'd never had to do it before. But whether she said goodbye or not, Briar was about to become a person who existed without Amira. She'd go to sleepovers with girls she'd met at school, and she'd have certain words that she'd always forget how to spell. She'd be a person who sometimes said things like, seriously? Or, that's so funny. And she'd ask a friend if this was her water or theirs. Briar would say goodbye in yearbook signatures and through heartbroken tears and through emails and over the phone. But she'd never say goodbye to Amira, which made it seem that Amira would never be completely free from her. For the rest of her life, and for $0 an hour, Amira would always be Briar's sitter. Outside, there was a shuffling of feet. Zara began performing an accelerated rendition of We Shall Overcome, and she ended every verse with, "Ay!" Amira heard Tamra say, "Girl, get down from there!" And Zara yelled back,
"I'm not resisting!"
Lainey asked everyone to please calm down as Catherine began to cry. Mrs. Chamberlain's voice said, "Where is Briar?" Amira placed her head at the side of Briar's. She kissed her cheek and took in Briar's scent, baby soap, strawberries, and the tart sweetness of dried yogurt. She sat back on her heels. In what she hoped would be the saddest gesture of her 20s, Amira tickled the side of Briar's neck and said, "I'll see you later, okay?" Briar pursed her lips into a smile and dipped her chin into Amira's fingers. She raised her shoulders up next to her ears as if she didn't know the answer to a very darling and rhetorical question. There were quick footsteps, and then the bathroom door swung open. Zara was out of breath. She leaned over with her hands on her knees, and between dramatic exhales, she said, "Kay, they mad, so go get an Uber," Amira instructed. She kissed the top of Briar's little head, placed her on the ground, and told herself to get out of the house. When she turned to go, Zara's presence had been replaced by Mrs. Chamberlain's. Mrs. Chamberlain's neck was blemished in red splotches of freckled skin. Her jaw was set strangely forward, and only her bottom teeth were showing. She looked at Amira as if Amira were hours late and she were waiting for her to deliver an apology.
"Tamra?"
she called. The sound of Tamra's socks could be heard on the tile as Catherine's uneven crying came closer. Once she had sufficient backup, Mrs. Chamberlain locked eyes with Amira again. From somewhere deep in her diaphragm, she said, "Amira, get away from her." Amira let an impressed expression slide over her face. This was really how Mrs. Chamberlain wanted to end it. By playing the matchless mom card that she always held so tightly to her chest. This was the most responsive reaction Mrs. Chamberlain had ever expressed concerning the whereabouts of her daughter, in what was, in Amira's opinion, the safest place Briar could ever be.
There's literally one thing I'm good at, Amira thought, and that's taking care of your daughter.
But still, Amira laughed once and said, "Okay." Amira walked past her, and Tamra swooped in on Briar as if Amira had just surrendered her last hostage. To her right, the front door was propped open by Zara and her shoe. Mrs. Chamberlain held her ground in the space in front of the guest bathroom, and from there she called Amira's name with a bold and bitchy authority.
Excuse me, Amira?
With both her hands on the vestibule doorframe, Amira looked to the hooks on the wall and said,
Where's my backpack?
With her phone in her hands, Zara looked to the stairs behind Amira. She winced and said,
Uh-oh.
Amira!
Amira turned around to find Mrs. Chamberlain's hands in the air in front of her and her fingers splayed wide. Amira took a breath and walked past her to the stairs. She found herself gracelessly crouching down as if doing so would make her less likely to be seen, or as if she were walking in front of a large group of people watching a game on a television screen. Amira saw Tamra patting the back of Briar's head on the couch as Mrs. Chamberlain took the stairs after her.
Amira, stop, she said.
Amira sped up. She heard Briar ask,
Where does Mira go now?
She didn't stop until she spotted her backpack on the floor of the upstairs bathroom. She snatched the strap and stood up, swinging it onto her right shoulder. But Mrs. Chamberlain took advantage of her delay by securing her feet in front of the bathroom door. With her hair around her face and her chest growing pinker by the second, Mrs. Chamberlain closed her eyes and said,
Are you kidding me?
Amira closed her mouth as Mrs. Chamberlain went on.
Amira, this can't be real, she said. Do you know what you just did? You just humiliated me and my entire business.
Amira couldn't believe she was in another white space so soon, trying to keep her cool and struggling to imply that she could honestly just go. Amira hoisted her backpack farther up on her shoulder.
I'm just grabbing my stuff, she said. Oh my God, Amira!
Mrs. Chamberlain's hands were in front of her chest again, and she wrung them as if she were wringing a neck.
Do you think that looked good for you either? Did you honestly seek out the Green Party just to do this to me?
Amira squinted in confusion.
No. Oh, so I tell you that I'm working with the Clinton campaign, and suddenly you want to quit and work for the Green Party?
No.
No?
No, Amira said louder.
I've worked for them longer than I've worked for you.
In the most dramatic reaction Amira had ever seen in real life, Mrs. Chamberlain's eyes bulged as she said,
What?
Amira thought about carefully pointing out that the things Mrs. Chamberlain seemed to care about most were whom Amira was dating, or what her favorite cocktail was, or what she was up to on a Friday night. But what was the point of having one more incident of trying to prove a point in the proximity of a 3-year-old child who Amira more than liked? So instead, Amira said, I'm just gonna go. She inhaled through gritted teeth as she inched past Mrs. Chamberlain and reached out to the stair banister.
Amira, are you serious?
Mrs. Chamberlain followed. Amira told herself not to trip as she gripped the railing and jogged down the steps. At the bottom, Lainey stood by the front vestibule with one hand to the wall and one against her chest. When Amira reached the first floor, Mrs. Chamberlain yelled out,
Don't you dare walk out that door like this!
Standing in the vestibule doorway, Amira turned around.
All of this was for you,
Mrs. Chamberlain cried.
We wanted to help you clear your name and you turn around and do this? Whatever Kelly said, Amira, everything we've done was for you. Everything, she said.
Her focused stare seemed to say, I know you know what I did, and I also don't care.
You might be too young to understand this right now, but we have always had your best interests at heart.
Amira, we
love you.
Mrs. Chamberlain threw her hands up in surrender as she said this, as if loving Amira was despite her family's other best interests. She shook her head.
I don't know what to say.
Amira stared up at the foyer chandelier. In that moment, Mrs. Chamberlain going into her email and releasing a private video seemed like the least of her or Mrs. Chamberlain's problems. Amira understood that if Mrs. Chamberlain had a video of herself being mistreated, she'd want someone to release it for her, too. There was no way of convincing Mrs. Chamberlain that what she had done had actually not been for Amira. However, this was a chance, Amira's last one, to suggest that Mrs. Chamberlain do something for someone else. Amira reached behind her back and secured the other strap onto her left arm.
So, right now, it's probably whatever, 'cause she's only 3, she said. But you gotta act like you like Briar once in a while, before she, like, really figures it out.
Mrs. Chamberlain put a hand to her sternum. Her collarbones became dangerously apparent as her neck curved. Her posture stiffened into an awkward slant. She stared at Amira and said, "Excuse me?"
"I know I'm not a mom or whatever," Amira said. "But you gotta stop looking at her like you're just waiting for her to change, 'cause, it is what it is, you know? You're her mom."
Everyone in the room stopped speaking. If someone had told Amira that she was bad at her job, she most likely would have done what she always did. Laugh once and say, "Okay." She knew that she was an excellent typist. She was an even better babysitter, and she'd be secretly grateful that someone considered what she did a job and not just a temporary side hustle. But Mrs. Chamberlain's stare went empty and embarrassed, as if she'd been caught in the middle of the night standing in front of the refrigerator, fork in hand and chocolate frosting on her face. Her lips smushed together underneath her nose, and Amira thought, "Is she really gonna cry?" For a second, Amira tried to convince herself that what she'd said wasn't that bad, but merely necessary and hopefully constructive. But then she heard air being tightly sucked into Zara's mouth behind her. Zara finished this inhalation with a quiet, "Oop, there it is." Outside the front door and down the porch steps, a car honked lightly.
"Sorry, this is weird," Amira exhaled.
She sidestepped twice before she finally turned to walk out of the Chamberlain house one last time. She made it all the way to the front porch, but then she turned around. She leaned her body back into the vestibule and said,
"Sorry, Lainey,"
before she followed Zara to the passenger side of a silver Ford Focus. Zara opened the door and said, "You Daryl?" The man nodded, and the girls hopped into the back seat. 27. Alex Murphy was one of the 2 senior class representatives at William Massey High, which meant she delivered announcements at every other assembly and wore a student council polo on Fridays. But by graduation, it didn't feel like Alex had achieved anything from this title. High school felt much more like a bad dream. After becoming the reason that Robbie Cormier wouldn't be attending George Mason University on a volleyball scholarship, Alex spent the final days of her senior year finding notes attached to her back and textbooks that read, "Thanks, Narc," and "Richie Bitch." One of the student council's responsibilities was cleaning up after graduation. Alex begged her student council advisor to give her another task, to not require her presence with the rest of the group as they took down streamers and told one another they couldn't believe high school was over. Her advisor must have known what happened. Everyone did. And so she gave Alex the easy alternative job of cleaning out the senior patio lockers. On the day after graduation, with a sullied rag and a bottle of surface cleaner, Alex started at the Z last names and worked backward toward the A's. Standing and cleaning the top lockers wasn't so bad. Kneeling on the concrete for the bottom ones, however, began to bruise her knees. By the Johnson lockers, she had to ask a maintenance worker for a new towel. And by the Garcias, she had filled up an entire trash can with leftover spiral notebooks, a few socks, magnetic mirrors, and candy wrappers. Alex threw away at least a dozen pocket-sized photos showing girls with corsages, two hands around their waists, or group pictures of soccer teams and exclusive lunch table attendants. The closer she got to Kelly Copeland's locker, the more Alex felt as if she were being watched. She began to feel unnatural in all her movements, as if she were pretending to read a magazine when she was really trying to overhear a conversation. Alex popped Kelly's locker open. It was so vacant and sad. This was the locker she'd dropped several letters into, and Kelly didn't even have the decency to leave it dirty for this moment. She hadn't known what she expected to find, but the fact that it didn't really need cleaning felt like a backhanded compliment. Still, Alex cleaned out Kelly's locker as if it had a thin coat of high school wear and tear. Kelly's locker creaked all the way open as Alex began to clean the locker directly beneath it. She started at the top and planned to work her way down, but Alex felt and heard the rag snag on something in the top corner. There was something paper and triangled squished in the metal plates in between this locker and Kelly's up above. With her fingernail underneath the rag, Alex bent farther on her knees and fingered the roof inside the locker, preparing herself for something foul to pop out, like a forgotten sandwich bag or the hardened wings of something dead. But after one final swipe at what she thought was possibly a dirty magazine hidden here for safekeeping, Alex gasped to see a flash of her own handwriting on folded loose-leaf paper fall out onto the ground in front of her knees. From the slot of space in between Kelly's locker and the locker beneath it were five of her letters. They were grimy and bent and yellowed, but even worse, they were still unopened and sealed with her cursive on the front reading, "From A.M." Alex gasped. She turned over her shoulder to find she was thankfully still alone, rapidly picked up her unopened letters and stuffed them between her breasts and her bra. She quickly wiped the locker down and slammed it shut, which was when she saw another set of initials engraved into the rusty metal. In the top corner of the locker door, Alex saw an R and a C. Just below Kelly's locker was Robbie Cormier's. For weeks, Alex had been thinking of Kelly and mostly just wondering, how could he do this? As it happened, all this time, he actually hadn't. But what did it matter now? The damage had been done. No matter what, students would call her names all summer, and Robbie's admission wouldn't be regranted. For a moment, Alex wondered if she should pull the letters out from her bra, or if they carried some dirt or muck that would make her skin break out. But once again, she looked over her shoulder and saw that no one was there. Alex was alone, and the one thing she still had was the freedom to follow the narrative that suited her best. It would never be a relief to know that a locker malfunction was to blame for her demise rather than Kelly Copeland himself. Believing that Kelly was the starting point of her adversity would always be easier than believing she'd simply slipped through an unlucky crack. This choice to believe otherwise, to pretend there weren't coffee-colored letters pressed into her chest, would keep her close to him, even if staying close to Kelly meant holding a grudge for something that he never did. And all summer long, as Alex rolled silverware and received lousy tips, it was easier doing it while mad at Kelly rather than having no relation to him at all. And by the time Alex moved to New York, it was like she didn't have to pretend. Kelly was the guy who ruined her senior year, much in the same way that her name was spelled A-L-I-X. 28. It would be unfair to say that Amira Tucker stopped babysitting. She worked the front desk of the Green Party office, but only for a total of 5 weeks. During a fundraising event, Amira was refilling a large carafe of coffee when she saw a little boy place a handful of goldfish on a flimsy paper plate. "Hey," Amira said to him, "how about we put those in a cup instead?" This child belonged to the regional director of the U.S. Census Bureau, a 6-foot-tall woman named Paula Christie, who watched on from afar.
Paula hired Amira as an administrative assistant, and Amira proceeded to spend the majority of her 26th year in meeting rooms and black SUVs. Amira booked Paula's appointments and ordered her lunches and stood backstage at panels and speeches, but she also rubbed the backs of Paula and other middle-aged adults as they cried and swore in private. She handed them tissues and told them it was okay. While her own news segment on WNFT was the gateway to the highest-paying position of her life, $18 an hour, she also received free lunch, Amira later found it funny that she once considered her four-minute segment on Philadelphia local news a big deal. The interview cut just after Zara announced, "Yeah, that's right." And aside from a few YouTube compilations of local news interviews gone wrong, no one Amira's age saw it. Not even Shawnee or Josepha. Amira made Zara swear. 3 days before Amira turned 28, her boss called her into her office. Amira sat down across from her and opened up her notebook, ready to take instructions or a lunch order, but Paula told her to put it away. "You've been here for almost 2 years, yes?" Paula confirmed. After Amira nodded, she added, "When are you planning on leaving?" Amira blinked 3 times and smiled. "Leaving?" she asked. Something Amira appreciated about Paula was her directness, but in moments like this, Amira was both grateful and afraid because Paula always meant what she said. Amira squinted and asked, "Am I getting fired right now?" "God, no. But Amira," she said, "I've never had an assistant who wanted to continue being my assistant for more than 2 years. Basically, if you stayed on for much longer, it would mean I'm doing something wrong." Amira sat back and laughed. "Okay, well," she looked at Paula's desk and a picture of her family. "I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually think I'm okay." Maybe she wasn't by her girlfriend's standards. Shawnee was engaged, Josepha was teaching at Drexel, Zara made enough money to get a 2-bedroom apartment and pay rent for both her and her little sister. But Amira really was doing okay. She'd gone to Mexico for Zara's birthday, all 5 days. She'd stuck to her New Year's resolution to make her bed every day. She had a savings account, which she dipped into often, but not so much that it didn't exist. And she'd added 2 new recipes to her dinner circulation, both of which were crockpot meals, but still. Amira also liked Paula and her kid. Her boss was fairly rude to everyone except for her, and Amira went to work feeling paid and protected. But Paula seemed disappointed in Amira's contentment. "Good bosses shouldn't make you happy in a job that they wouldn't want to do themselves," she said. "It's my job to make you so miserable that you're forced into finding something that brings you joy. And then I help you seal the deal. So, your goal for the next year is to learn how to properly hate your job and find something else that you wouldn't hate doing. Got it?" Amira said, "Got it," and went back to her desk. She would stay on as Paula's assistant until Paula retired. It would take Amira 4 more years to receive Shawnee's starting salary of $52,000, but Amira came to know the rare relief of having a boss who was so consumed with her assistant's success that she was never derailed by the idea of being Amira's friend. That day, after she walked out of Paula's office, Amira went back to her desk and clicked an open window on her computer. She clicked Add to Cart and Check Out on a love seat for her apartment, upon which she and Zara would spend an entire weekend painting their nails and watching 2 seasons of America's Next Top Model. After her news segment, Amira didn't hear from Kelly for 6 whole days. She told herself that she and he were too different, that they drank too much when they were together, that she didn't know why she tried to date a white guy who lived in Fishtown anyway. Technically, Kelly had won. Amira very publicly stuck it to Mrs. Chamberlain with a remix of his breakup line, which, despite her paraphrasing, she thought he could use as an opening line if he decided to try calling her one more time. But when he did finally contact her, 1 week after she quit, it was a clunky and trite text of encouragement that Amira did not enjoy. "Amira, holy shit. I just saw your clip from the news. I know things are weird right now, but I'm so proud of you. I always knew you could do it." Despite being more broke than she'd ever been in her life and still grieving the loss of Briar Chamberlain, this complimentary sentiment promptly made it final. There was no way that she and Kelly would ever recover from the acknowledgement that he'd been right about Mrs. Chamberlain. Forming a relationship again would somehow dictate that he could be right about everything else, when really, he had a lot to learn. Amira never texted him again. His name in her phone remained, "Don't answer." Amira did see Kelly again, but he didn't see her. On a Saturday summer morning, when Amira was 28 years old, she went with Shawnee to a farmer's market at Clyde Park. The girls got separated when Shawnee spotted a truck with kittens for adoption, and Amira roamed the produce tables, taking in the smells and looking for her friend. For a moment, Amira thought she spotted the back of Shawnee, but she quickly realized that it couldn't have been Shawnee, because this person was holding Kelly Copeland's hand. Next to a table of soy candles and bottled honey, Kelly stood next to a light-skinned black woman with fresh coils of dark hair. She turned, and Amira took her in. There were gladiator sandals on her feet, a small gold septum ring in her nose, and a basket hanging on her arm filled with root vegetables and essential oils. "Babe, give me 2 seconds," she said, touching Kelly's arm. "I'm gonna see if I can sign up to sell my shea butter here next week. Can you hold this real quick?" Amira watched her hand Kelly a smoothie. When he accepted it, he grinned and said, "Okay, miss." In another lifetime, Amira would have texted Mrs. Chamberlain to let her know she'd run into Kelly. She would have typed, "You won't believe who I saw." And Mrs. Chamberlain would have texted back, "Tell me everything." Because even though Kelly'd been right about her, Alix had been right about him too. If things had gone differently, Amira would have also texted Mrs. Chamberlain a picture of her new couch, and Mrs. Chamberlain would have been ecstatic. Sometimes Amira thought that if she'd learned how to say Mrs. Chamberlain's first name, that maybe she would have calmed down a bit. But they hadn't gone differently. And like Amira, Mrs. Chamberlain was a grown human person with choices and decisions, and the funds to order sushi at least 2 times a week. Amira would think of Mrs. Chamberlain many times on election night and pray that she had enough room in her heart for both a devastating failure and her firstborn child. That same year, 4 months after she spotted Kelly, Amira walked to pick up a bridesmaid dress for what would become Shawnee's first wedding. It was 3 days till Halloween, but it was a weekend, and children walked the sidewalks in costumes and masks, pillowcases and buckets in their hands. There was a carnival in Rittenhouse Square, and along a brick ledge that bordered the sidewalk sat mini pumpkins that had been decorated by what looked to be mini hands. They were covered in glitter paint and feathers, and they were drying in the sun. Down at the far end of the 4-foot-tall ledge, 5-year-old Briar was dressed as a hamburger, reaching up on her tiptoes and struggling to reach a pumpkin doused in green. Amira whispered, "Fuck," and willed herself to keep walking.
"Mama? Mama, can you get mine for me?"
"Just a second, Bri," Mrs. Chamberlain said. At the other side of the sidewalk, wearing an expensive beanie, a khaki trench coat, and booties that had tassels on the backs, Mrs. Chamberlain was squatting in front of 2-year-old Catherine.
"This zipper is stuck, isn't it?" she said.
Catherine yawned and licked a sucker. Amira watched Briar come down off her tiptoes and take a look around. Behind her, 2 black nannies were pushing strollers with sleeping babies inside. Amira watched Briar go straight up to one,
lift her hand, and pat the closest woman's thigh.
"Excuse me, nice lady," she asked. "Can you please help me reach my pumpkin?"
The nanny seemed greatly amused, as if she hadn't been called nice lady in years. She said,
"Sure, which one is yours?"
Amira wished that she'd walked up a little faster, that Briar could have called her the same name, that she could have talked to Briar without Mrs. Chamberlain just one more time. And then she felt her heart crush even further into her stomach as Briar pointed up at a bright green pumpkin and said,
"It's this one."
Amira held her breath as she put her head down and walked around the nannies, Briar, Mrs. Chamberlain, and Catherine. She heard Briar tell the woman thank you, and Mrs. Chamberlain laugh and apologize for her daughter. Deep into her 30s, Amira would wrestle with what to take from her time at the Chamberlain house. Some days, she carried the sweet relief that Briar would learn to become a self-sufficient person. And some days, Amira would carry the dread that if Briar ever struggled to find herself, she'd probably just hire someone to do it for her. This is Nicole Lewis. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed. This program was directed by Garrett Scott, executive producer Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2019 by Kylie Reed. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.